In a world in which governments and companies continually encroach on personal liberties via surveillance and outright control, Bitcoin shines like a beacon of freedom. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. Are we going to take the hard path to a Bitcoin world or the easy path? What's the difference? And can we push things one way or the other? Welcome to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are getting into some anti-Bitcoin narratives today, and they are going to flood in. They have already started. It's pretty obvious. It's suddenly captured everybody's attention. And we need to be ready. That is why this piece, by Andy Edstrom and Peter McCormick, was really a super easy choice to read on the show. I was about a quarter way through it, and I was like, okay, this is an obvious read. Let's just get into it. It is about how to frame our arguments when we are meeting the anti-Bitcoin propaganda. And of course, this is from the incredible Bitcoin magazine, who have been publishing works like crazy lately, and they are all so good. I don't know what they are doing over there, CK and Riggins, the whole team, but you guys are killing it. Keep it up. And they actually now have a page that is dedicated to all the articles busting the energy FUD. I will have a link to that in the show notes. That is a resource you need to bookmark so that you have it ready whenever you need it. A quick thank you to our sponsors, to Bitbox Hardware Wallet, the Bitbox O2, an amazing product for your Bitcoin cold storage. If you want next level security without the next level frustration, Bitcoin is the easy way to get that. And of course, thank you to Level.co, LVL.co, a Bitcoin exchange and banking services. They have no trading fees. If you want to get your check direct deposited, immediately turned into Bitcoin, and then only sell what you need to live, Level.co is what you need to check out, or of course guyswan.com/level. You can find both of our awesome sponsors just right at the top of the page at guyswan.com. So without further ado, let's get into today's article on how to frame our moral position for a Bitcoin future. And it's titled Winning Hearts and Minds for Bitcoin by Andy Edstrom and Peter McCormick. We often encounter Bitcoins who assert that Bitcoin is unstoppable and has already, quote, won. We happen to agree with them, but the end game has yet to play out, and it still has two potential paths. One is easy, the other is hard. On the easy path, positive narratives about Bitcoin outweigh negative ones. We experience a peaceful mass adoption process based on people's expectations for huge individual and societal benefits of money that is hard to print, censor, or steal. This is the path we seem to be on here at the beginning of 2021, as regulatory barriers fall and Bitcoin's popularity rises. But the hard path also remains open to us. On this path, Bitcoiners become vilified as self-righteous and arrogant winners who are identified with the phrase, quote, have fun staying poor, and find themselves resented or even attacked by their less fortunate neighbors. One of us believes that the hard path is more likely than the easy one. Regardless of the probabilities of each path, we want Bitcoin and Bitcoiners to take the easy path. And if we can increase the probability of that outcome by even one percentage point, it will be worth the effort. Toward this end, we have concluded that pursuing the easy path requires some understanding of human psychology that we only recently discovered. Moral Foundations. Inspired by research done by cultural anthropologist Richard Schroeder, psychologists Jonathan Haidt, Craig Joseph, and Jesse Graham developed the, quote, Moral Foundations Theory. Like any psychological theory, it must be taken with a large grain of salt. But Bitcoin proselytizers can learn something from it that may help them push Bitcoin onto the easy path rather than the hard one. The basic idea behind the theory is that most human action is driven not by cold, calculating, rational behavior, such as might be observed in the fictional Homo economicus. Instead, our intuition drives our actions, and logical reasoning follows such intuition. To illustrate the idea, the psychologists invoke an image of an elephant with a rider on top. The elephant represents our human intuition, which is generally the driving force of our actions. It represents patterns of thinking that proved adaptive as humans evolved and competed to survive. While the logically reasoning rider can influence the elephant, once the elephant starts moving in one direction, it gains momentum that is difficult for the rider to reverse. It becomes easier for the rider to construct logical arguments that justify the direction in which the elephant is already moving. The psychologists cite evidence for six primary foundations of the driving intuition. These foundations are 1, care or harm, 2, fairness or cheating, 3, loyalty or betrayal, 4, authority or subversion, 5, sanctity or degradation, and 6, liberty or oppression. Each foundation is believed to be rooted in social dynamics selected for by evolution. In The Righteous Mind, 2012, Haidt applies the 6 foundations to politics and uses the framework to explain why conservatism in the U.S. has proven surprisingly resilient, since it draws on all 6 of the foundations, while liberalism draws primarily on just 2, care or harm, and fairness or cheating. Just as Haidt recommends that political leaders attempt to appeal to as many of the 6 foundations as possible when selling their policies to the public, Bitcoiners would be wise to base their narratives around Bitcoin's benefits for both individuals and society on as many of the 6 foundations as possible. Each of the following 6 sections includes for each of the foundations: 1, a direct quote from The Righteous Mind; 2, an example in bold and italics; and 3, our thoughts on how the foundation maps onto Bitcoin. 1. Care or Harm. Quote, "The Care-Harm Foundation evolved in response to the adaptive challenge of caring for vulnerable children. It makes us sensitive to signs of suffering and need. It makes us despise cruelty and want to care for those who are suffering." The Righteous Mind, page 178. "We react viscerally when a defenseless creature, especially a child, is threatened with harm." The clearest negative Bitcoin narrative sitting on the Care or Harm Foundation is global warming. Bitcoiners are only too familiar with the "Bitcoin will boil the oceans" criticism, and it requires a strong response. Neoclassical economics suggests that government policies are the solution to the negative externality of greenhouse gases. Such solutions come in 2 major categories, quote, "sticks" and, quote, "carrots." The "sticks" category includes taxing carbon emissions and limiting total emissions quantities, example, cap and trade. In the "carrots" category are subsidies paid to manufacturers and purchasers of solar panels, wind turbines, and batteries, as has occurred with Tesla. In our view, policies involving sticks are mostly doomed in the long run. That's because a large portion of the world's greenhouse gas emissions today and in the next decade will come from poor and middle-income countries. Think coal plants in China and India, which belch huge amounts of carbon, and deforestation in Brazil and Indonesia, which releases carbon and destroys carbon-capturing vegetation to provide pastures for methane-emitting livestock. For countries like these, policies to limit or tax carbon emissions just don't compute. Their leaders must prioritize lifting the masses out of poverty as soon as possible. Making energy more expensive via taxes or emission caps makes this harder. Moreover, rich countries already got to emit multiples more tons of carbon per citizen alive today as they industrialized and built wealth over the last 2 centuries. Granting the same opportunity to poor countries to catch up to rich ones involves a lot more carbon emission per citizen in these countries. From a fairness perspective, rich countries who want to convince poor ones to emit less don't have a leg to stand on unless they are prepared to write gigantic checks. And many of the biggest rich countries can't even agree on policies to limit their own emissions, much less subsidize clean energy in developing nations. So if sticks are out, then we are left with carrots, and the relevant one is subsidizing the development of cheaper green energy. Specifically, the subsidy needs to drive down the cost of production of clean energy toward zero. When a technology is in its infancy, it can make sense for the government to pay outright for research and development. ARPANET, an important precursor to the internet, is a classic example. But once a technology can be turned into a usable product, private enterprise takes the reins. That's where Bitcoin is today. Since electricity can't efficiently travel farther than a few hundred miles, the majority of the potential solar and wind assets on Earth are stranded. Think uninhabited deserts and breezy regions of the ocean. But Bitcoin mining allows these otherwise inaccessible assets to be brought online, since all that is required is an internet connection and basic utility support. Remote but otherwise ideal sites for renewable energy production suddenly have a ready use for their potential production in the form of locally sited Bitcoin mining facilities. Sites that would be economically infeasible due to their excessive distance from population centers can now be profitably developed. This increases the units of solar panels and wind turbines sold globally. The extra sales increase the manufacturer's revenues, which increases their profits, which funds their research and development budgets. This brings down the average cost of production for solar and wind capacity, which unlocks more stranded renewable resources, which drives research and development, and the virtuous circle drives renewable energy costs towards zero. This same pattern has played out in numerous other industries, and renewable energy should be no different. Indeed, as Connor Brown articulates in Bitcoin, A Bold American Future, this process could lead to both energy independence at the national level and a permanent recession in hydrocarbon-based energy production. Bitcoiners need to educate people on this topic and avoid beginning passively on the back foot. Whenever talking to someone who is concerned with Bitcoin's environmental effects, it may make sense to lead with this question. Could you please explain to me how we're going to defeat global warming without Bitcoin? In other words, defend your doomed sticks arguments, and I will respond with my Bitcoin carrot. 2. Fairness and cheating. The Fairness Cheating Foundation evolved in response to the adaptive challenge of reaping the rewards of cooperation without getting exploited. It makes us sensitive to indications that another person is likely to be a good or bad partner for collaboration and reciprocal altruism. It makes us want to shun or punish cheaters. The Righteous Mind, page 178. Most people care a lot about fairness, such as taking more than your fair share or cutting the line. Most Bitcoiners we know, ourselves included, believe that Bitcoin will be enormously beneficial to society in the long run. Understanding this thesis in full requires reading Jeff Booth's brilliant book, The Price of Tomorrow. In a nutshell, technology, entrepreneurship, and economic progress are all about making things better, faster, and especially cheaper. Home lighting, long-distance transportation, communication, and computation have all become orders of magnitude cheaper over time. So in the long run, consumer prices experience deflation in an advancing economy. The consumer's basket of goods and services gets cheaper. This makes consumers effectively richer and better off since their money buys more. Yet the central bankers tell us we must have inflation. So they vainly swim against the natural deflationary current, print money, lower interest rates, and cause the giant debt bubbles we observe today. Bitcoin fixes this. It delivers a deflationary money to match the natural state of any successful economy. Consumer price deflation. But in the short term, Bitcoin has a perception problem regarding fairness. Many people still view Bitcoin as a typical pyramid scheme in which the early adopters benefit disproportionately and get rich on the backs of the latecomers. Never mind that the early adopters suffered ridicule, hostility, and gut-wrenching price volatility. Anyone who has experienced the vicissitudes of a multi-year Bitcoin bear market has likely suffered enough psychological pain to earn his or her Bitcoin fortune. But the uninitiated will struggle to understand this. Moreover, the latest wave of billionaires and wealthy investors accumulating Bitcoin does not help the fairness narrative, because many will now argue that Bitcoin has been captured by the rich. Making the world safe for Bitcoiners will therefore require that we convince skeptics of the long-term societal benefits of Bitcoin, while highlighting that the concentration of Bitcoin ownership is not significantly worse than any other capitalist enterprise, with Exhibit A being the concentrated shareholdings of the giant internet companies, and that most already rich people who got into Bitcoin came to the party relatively late. Moreover, people who hold lots of Bitcoins today will likely peel some off over time as the price rises, just as shareholders of successful companies do. Helping skeptics understand the societal benefits of Bitcoin requires explaining how debt-fueled economies lead to 1. Unnecessary overconsumption, 2. Disincentives towards saving, as saved money loses purchasing power over time, and 3. Capital misallocation and destruction, as large enterprises that should fail are propped up, while job-creating startups struggle to compete. 3. Loyalty and betrayal. The Loyalty Betrayal Foundation evolved in response to the adaptive challenge of forming and maintaining coalitions. It makes us sensitive to signs that another person is, or is not, a team player. It makes us trust and reward such people, and it makes us want to hurt, ostracize, or even kill those who betray us or our group. The Righteous Mind, page 178. People can behave violently against their competitors, but a special level of retribution is often reserved for, quote, traitors to the group. We can see both a pro-Bitcoin and an anti-Bitcoin narrative resting on the Loyalty Betrayal Foundation. Having made his career in the legacy financial system, Andy has no doubt that his support of Bitcoin, coupled with his criticism of the banking industry, has alienated some of his friends and contacts who are still part of the legacy system. Given the number of people employed in legacy finance broadly, banking, wealth management, insurance, etc., there is a significant cohort of people who stand to lose, at least on a relative basis, from Bitcoin's rise. The, quote, sanctity of the existing legacy financial system is therefore under threat, and it may hit back. Conversely, those of us who have gone to great lengths to educate our family and friends about Bitcoin have succeeded in helping some of them to profit from Bitcoin's growth. Nothing creates bonds of trust, loyalty, and gratitude like helping people we care about to use a tool that provides them with financial security. These tribes of people are potentially a strong grassroots effort that fosters strong ties of loyalty and support for the larger superstructure of Bitcoiners globally. We must all continue to help the people we value to understand Bitcoin and use it for the betterment of their social circles. 4. Authority and Subversion. The Authority Subversion Foundation evolved in response to the adaptive challenge of forming relationships that will benefit us within social hierarchies. It makes us sensitive to signs of rank and status, and to signs that other people are or are not behaving properly given their position. The Righteous Mind, page 179. Most people respect authority and care about maintaining order. Of the 6 foundations, this is Bitcoin's weakest. For the significant portion of humanity that is inclined toward respect for authority, Bitcoin can at first look like toxic waste. Bitcoin aims to challenge government's ability to control money, which is the opposite of what we might expect the typical rule-following citizen to support. In this category, Bitcoiners will have to lean on the sad fact that governments have printed their currencies into oblivion and inflated the largest debt bubble in history in order to maintain the debt and government entitlement Ponzi scheme. We will have to highlight the failings of the existing monetary system in a way that makes it unavoidably obvious to anyone listening. Fortunately, the government has already done most of the work for us, and it is likely to continue to do so. All we have to do is amplify the existing signal. Moreover, there are already numerous books, articles, videos, podcasts, and other media that support the case that a world that prominently features Bitcoin will be more orderly than a fiat-based one. For every skeptic of non-state-sponsored money, there are likely several pieces of content that will resonate. 5. Sanctity or Degradation. The Sanctity Degradation Foundation evolved initially in response to the adaptive challenge of the omnivore's dilemma, and then to the broader challenge of living in a world of pathogens and parasites. It includes the behavioral immune system, which can make us wary of a diverse array of symbolic options and threats. It makes it possible for people to invest objects with irrational and extreme values, both positive and negative, which are important for binding groups together. The Righteous Mind, page 179. Cultures, religions, and societies sanctify certain things, such as religious structures, relationships such as marriage, and the human body. We can see both a pro-Bitcoin and an anti-Bitcoin angle on the Sanctity Degradation Foundation. For some people, government money may be a somewhat hallowed concept. Certainly, governments are adept at wrapping money into prideful nationalism. The U.S. government makes every effort to associate money with sacred images and symbols. On the $1 bill, we see the American bald eagle, the Eye of Providence, the image of the country's venerated first president, George Washington, and the words, "In God We Trust." What any of these things has to do with good money is questionable, especially since the currency's ongoing debasement means that a dollar bill doesn't buy much anymore. But the sheer repetition of exposure to such imagery must cause some mental association between the dollar and sacred imagery and concepts. Perhaps this helps explain many people's initial hostility to Bitcoin, since it is perceived by some as a threat to the hallowed dollar. On the other hand, Bitcoin's, quote, immaculate conception, Hollywood script quality origin and growth story, and zealous supporters all imbue Bitcoin with a sacred aura. We believe that with careful attention to important rituals like running a full node, custodying your own private keys, and spreading the Bitcoin, quote, gospel to others, Bitcoin can achieve sanctity in the minds of the masses. 6. Liberty and Oppression. The Liberty or Oppression Foundation evolved in response to the adaptive challenge of living in small groups with individuals who would, if given the chance, dominate, bully, and constrain others. The original triggers, therefore, include signs of attempted domination. Anything that suggests the aggressive, controlling behavior of an alpha male or female can trigger this form of righteous anger, which is sometimes called reactance. That's the feeling you get when an authority tells you that you can't do something, and you feel yourself wanting to do it even more strongly. The Righteous Mind, page 200. People in free Western societies, especially the United States, value liberty highly, and they frequently react with righteous hostility when their freedoms or those of others are infringed upon. Among the six foundations, liberty is Bitcoin's true cornerstone, and it is the one on which Bitcoiners must lean hardest. Money that is hard to print, censor, or steal is a powerful tool for liberty and against oppression. Whether storing value from corrupt regimes in hyperinflationary countries, or escaping oppression by safely crossing borders with one's savings in a brain wallet, Bitcoin resonates strongly with anyone who values liberty. In a world in which governments and companies continually encroach on personal liberties via surveillance and outright control, Bitcoin shines like a beacon of freedom. This is an especially potent narrative for anyone living in a Western democracy that places a high value on liberty. As residents of societies that value freedom, we will be leaning especially hard on the Liberty Foundation. Conclusion. Until very recently, many of us Bitcoiners have relied too heavily on our logical, rational minds when trying to get people interested in Bitcoin. How many more people could we have reached earlier if we had invoked the moral foundations theory for understanding human motivation? While this framework may not be perfect, we believe it can be a potent tool for winning the hearts and minds of the masses and traveling the easy path to Bitcoin adoption. This path may still be long, but it promises to be less arduous than the alternative. Will you join us? And that was a guest post by Andy Edstrom and Peter McCormick, Winning Hearts and Minds for Bitcoin. Now, I really want to dig into some of this. I saved a whole bunch of little snippets and stuff for this, so hopefully the guy's take won't be an hour and a half, but I've got some really good stuff, and I love this article and this framing because I think this is something that we really do need to focus on, particularly in this phase of Bitcoin's existence. So let's hit our sponsor really quick, and then we will jump back in because I got a lot to say about this awesome piece. Did you ever wish, like me, years ago, that you could just do all of your banking in Bitcoin? That I'd have a bank account that would just instantly convert between dollars and Bitcoin whenever I needed it to. I had a connected debit card, all the ACH transfers, direct deposit, etc. Well, it's here. Level.co is full Bitcoin mobile banking services with all of the above and a free exchange. That's right, there's no trading fees. Level.co believes that the future of Bitcoin and finance in the digital space is free, and they intend to be the pioneers that make that happen. So check them out at level.co, that's LVL.co, or right at the top of the page at guyswan.com. And if you wanted a no-fee Bitcoin exchange and banking services, level.co is the only place you need to go. Let's jump back in to today's show. So this bull market is going to bring, or has brought, the critics out of the wood, and we're going to get hit with massive amounts of anti-Bitcoin propaganda this round. I think 2021 is going to be a very challenging year in that sense, and it's going to be specifically because number is going to go up at a breathtaking pace. I'm not sure if you saw earlier, but I think it was, let me see, I think I have it here somewhere, one of these tabs. True News. So Janet Yellen is Biden's Treasury nominee, and she made a statement saying how cryptocurrencies are dangerous and they're an important concern, and they're mainly used for illicit purposes and terrorist financing and money laundering, essentially. Not an exact quote, but that's basically what she said. And that these things need to be, quote, curtailed. Their use needs to be curtailed. And for anybody watching Twitter and, you know, any of the other platforms, the news, this is increasing. We're going to be absolutely lambasted with propaganda. They're going to work incredibly hard to turn other people against Bitcoin. And of course, more specifically, against Bitcoiners. And like Andy and Peter McCormick said in this article, is that we basically have, you know, the hard path or the easy path. And I think the easy path is still going to be met with a lot of difficulty, but it will absolutely make a difference how we address this propaganda and this push to demonize Bitcoin. And that's really what caught me about this article. I think this is going to be incredibly relevant, and arguing from these mental frameworks is actually a really, really good idea. We need anti-propaganda. Like, we need very concise and thought-out responses to essentially attack when these specific when the specific FUD lands. And what's funny is that we already know the FUD. We already know exactly what they're going to come at us with. I mean, Nick Carter has a dice. He has a die that, you know, has all of the FUD right on it. And we've seen nothing new. Like, I can just, every single time I'm like looking through my Twitter feed or whatever, and there's another, you know, anti-Bitcoin piece or thread or whatever it is, it's one of those things on the dice. Like, it's right there. I could just pick right through. Like, you just roll it, and then you write an article about Bitcoin going to be boiling the oceans or Tether or whatever it is. And I just think we need to be prepared. You know, we need to think about this very seriously, and I don't think we should dismiss it. You know, as much as I love the Bitcoin culture, and I even love the have fun staying poor, but it is overly dismissive to be used so regularly. I think, like something that's really powerful, at which have fun staying poor is, needs to be used in very specific instances, I feel like. I mean, not that this probably won't have any effect, but these are at least my thoughts on it. So think about it the next time you're about to type an H. Use it where it makes sense. Don't overuse it. Don't use it just because somebody criticized, or you know, you got kind of put in a tight spot in a thread, or didn't want to answer a question or something like that. You know, let's think of an example. Have you ever seen The Last Jedi? That atrocious, steaming pile of narrative crap. May the Force be with you is one of the most iconic lines in movie history. And the beauty of having a line so powerful, and it's like an ace in the hole, right? Is that you get an incredibly easy tool for tugging on nostalgia and raising the stakes of some pivotal point in the movie. If it is not handed out like a spamming email at every damn scene that you want somebody to feel something, a well-timed dramatic scene among a light movie can be incredibly intense, particularly when it's obviously like at the narrative place where we want the drama. But when you do that a second time shortly after the previous dramatic scene, the audience is going to kind of be disconnected. Then you do it a third time right after that, and now the audience is just not going to care. And if they're still watching the fourth time you do it, they're just going to laugh. You've worn out your emotional credit. It goes from drama to melodrama to just hilariously bad. And this is what The Last Jedi did with May the Force Be With You. And, you know, I fear that's what Bitcoiners will do with Have Fun Staying Poor. There's no governor, you know, there's no restrictive gauge on it, and it's just a lot of fun. But, you know, in The Last Jedi, I basically wanted to just throw up and, you know, punch the director, Rian Johnson, in the head about the 23rd time that they said that movie, because it just completely killed any caring for it at all, and it just felt awful. And Have Fun Staying Poor is actually a really powerful tool, specifically when it's used against somebody who is unbelievably belligerent and just 100% will not listen or is not asking honest questions. That, I think, is when the memes come into play. But otherwise, I think we need to be ready with a positive argument, one that puts them on the defensive and makes them answer questions. A great example is what Andy Edstrom and Peter McCormick talked about in this piece about the global warming thing, is that how are we going to solve the global warming and the renewable energy problem without Bitcoin? Make them, like, back to the sticks and carrots analogy, is that the sticks are not going to work. They're just not. And I completely agree. It is absolutely, it's a ridiculous injustice to think that we're going to tell the countries that are finally industrializing and finally being raised out of poverty how much it's going to cost, like the bill that they're going to pay in order to do that, especially after we already got that privilege of, you know, industrializing. And now it's like, oh, we're important, we rule the world, we're going to tell you that, you know, it's going to be 10 times slower and way more costly because, you know, we the righteous modern world know the correct way for you to develop into actual wealth and prosperity. So put them on the defensive. Make them defend the stick, and we argue the carrot. Argue from a point of confidence. Like, we know the game theory plays out. Bitcoin is an incredible force for renewable energies and for subsidizing clean, incredibly cheap energy and new energy sources that wouldn't be profitable or wouldn't make any sense otherwise. You know, things like have fun staying poor are very much in the tradition of Satoshi's, if you don't get it, I don't have time to explain it to you, you know, famous statement. And it's been repeated over and over. And the reason it's so powerful when Satoshi used it is because he only used it once, right? Is that he did answer questions. He did address it. But when he was met with somebody who was clearly not being honest or was clearly just being absurd and belligerent about the criticisms, that's when that answer makes sense. And I think this is how we need to think of something like have fun staying poor. Just be sparing about it. You know, don't use it as a crutch. Like, Peter Schiff has earned the shit out of that statement. So give it to him all day. But I don't know, just something to keep in mind. Now, so to these, the specific frameworks that they refer to in this. First, on the global warming issue, on the care versus harm mode or foundation. You know, I think one of the most horrible, like, just asinine political mutilations of common sense in the past 30 years has been convincing the whole world that anything that uses energy was inherently bad. This is a deeply anti-human view. Every single innovation and successful new technology that raised people out of destitution and poverty was a result of finding a better way to use energy in order to replace a task that we used to have to do by ourselves. So it is using energy to replace human work, human labor. The standard of living of all societies is strikingly proportional to the amount of energy that each person can command toward their lives. If you lower the price and increase the availability of energy, you increase the standard of living, period. And what's funny is that you could actually use that as a better measure of productivity and growth and efficiency in this society than, you know, because money has been made such a terrible tool, and it doesn't have any natural deflation anymore, and GDP is such a garbage metric. Actually, the energy use is probably the better measure of the three of a standard of living in a country. And the political system has essentially demonized the source of human life and human flourishing is really just an immense evil in my book. But all that aside, there are ways to use or produce energy that obviously have varying trade-offs. And this is the real question. You know, funny enough is that the reason we switched to oil, to petroleum and gas, like to these fuels as our dominant sources is because they were the cleaner way, not because they were dirty. You know, prior to this, you know, we used horses and livestock and, you know, cities were disgusting. They were just rank cesspools of disease and filth. Cars were actually a game changer in getting a thick layer of horse feces out of the cities. So oil was the clean option. Gas was the clean option. And this is usually the case. In fact, this is really kind of a universal truth of newer technologies. When we get more energy out of it, it's typically because it's more efficient, because there is less waste. So how do we get people to care? How do we get people to adjust and actually correct for this? Like, if we're talking about CO2 as a negative externality of energy source, of our energy use, you know, complaining about CO2 is something that it is a privilege of the wealthy. You know, not a single starving family in India could give two shits about how much CO2 they are producing. You have to be high and mighty on our digital throne with our refrigerators and smartphones and electricity and warm house while it's freezing cold outside. And we got our Netflix and Christmas movies and birthday presents and social media. You have to have all of that before you have a moment to care about whether or not it's getting warmer outside. And if you want people to care about the environment, you need to get them out of poverty first. When they aren't sure if they're going to put food on the table, they are simply going to hate you for raising their cost, for trying to control the way that they are trying to better their lives. And all of the stick, quote-unquote, policies out there are simply another way to let the incumbents who already get the benefits of that prosperous growth and the industrialization, it's a way for them to hold more power and get more money off of the backs of those who are trying to catch up and are still stuck in horrific poverty. And all it leads to is more suffering and a huge increase and the continued increase in the amount of political power, the unbelievable corruption that comes with a whole new way to control your competitors, and just making regulatory captures so much easier, and just giving massive payoff to lobbyists and special interests who are going to make an absolute killing off of this stuff. You know, fun fact, you remember cap and trade. They mentioned cap and trade in this article. Do you know why cap and trade died? It's because the financial incentive to profit off of it massively fell away. So there was originally, through the entire time this was being pushed, and it was being pushed in the media, and everybody was talking about it, and it was being pushed by the environmentalists, everybody's talking about, we had to have cap and trade. It had a grandfather clause where anybody who was already polluting was grandfathered in with basically certificates. They were given pollution tokens, literally, or CO2 carbon tokens that they could then sell onto the market to people that are coming into the market. You know, this was the perfect example. This is just a beautiful case study of the bootleggers and Baptists theory, that the only way a regulation or a bill gets moved through the political system is if there is a huge moral reason, very much aligned to this article's, you know, whole stance, is that we need a moral argument for why these things are. We need to get rid of, stop worrying about the rational or trying to explain details or whatever it is. We need to attack this from a moral position because we have the moral high ground and we should not give it up and get lost in the details. But basically, in the bootleggers and Baptist theory, is that there's the Baptists. It's about prohibition, right? Is that how do you get alcohol outlawed? How do you make it so that you can't sell alcohol on Sunday? Well, what you need is the moral argument. You need the facade. You need the commercial of the Baptists who say alcohol is the devil. It's evil. We got to get rid of it. And that's that leads people to believe that there's a great grand moral cause as to why this law is necessary. But you need the funding from the bootleggers, because the bootleggers get to make massive profits off of the fact that all of their competitors are put out of business, or that all of the Main Street stores can't sell alcohol on Sunday, so bootleggers are the only ones that you can get it from. They are the ones that triple, quadruple, quintuple their profits. They fund it. The bootleggers fund the regulation. The Baptists are the face. They are the commercial. And oftentimes they don't know it. But whenever there is a hard push in the political system to get something done, and then there's an environmentalist face on it, you can bet your ass there is some evil sack of shit that is lobbying their butt off and is going to make mountains of money off of that regulation. And that is exactly what was happening with cap and trade. Everybody was pushing it insanely hard because of that grandfathered in clause. It was going to, for free, give those who polluted the most a token that they could sell onto the market, that suddenly just value that just poofed into existence because of a new regulation that restricted everyone else coming into the market and raised costs on new businesses. It's basically an ICO, right? They just get a free token to sell legally on this new massive multi-trillion-dollar market to all the sad new businesses that now have 10 times the cost to just do normal operations. And now their actual enterprises have to fund the incumbents. So again, this is the fun fact here is, why did cap and trade die? Because after tons and tons of iterations and lots of fighting, finally, somebody removed that grandfathered in clause. I knew at the time who it was, but I can't remember now, but there were just a handful of representatives that had been pushing for that and finally got that removed, and the whole thing died. I mean, it was literally like somebody cut off the radio. The whole signal, everything, nobody gave a shit about it anymore because now there was no profit. And the environmentalists are just, they had no bullhorn because the bullhorn was being funded by the lobbyists who were going to make mountains of money off of this stuff. And as soon as that happened, why am I funding the news to talk about this all the damn time? It just vanished. Anyway, a little bit of a tangent, but I just always thought that was such a great example of how unbelievably corrupt our political system is. And it's also something that we really need to take advantage of. The trust is dying in these legacy systems. Their corruption is vastly more obvious than it has ever been in the past, and they are being exposed left and right, and people are beginning to realize what a sham this is. We need to take advantage of that. We need to have it thrown in their faces every single time. When they talk about money laundering, the first post underneath their little stupid video or clip or whatever it is, or their thread, needs to be where they have committed massive money laundering, where they have committed fraud, and showing just how unbelievably corrupt and stupid that system is. And people are waking up to this. You know, people are realizing, you know, people are talking about Bitcoin and asking about Bitcoin because they see how unbelievably scary and nonsensical the dollar system is. When you see, even if you don't fundamentally understand the reasons, like maybe you couldn't explain it, you couldn't teach a course on inflation or why it's bad to print a whole lot of money, but when you see $6 trillion get printed and dumped into the economy, there is this natural little thing in the back of your head that goes, why is money worth anything? Like, what's wrong with this picture? This can't possibly just work. And it takes mountains of propaganda to believe otherwise. Like, you have to have like a PhD in money printing in order to actually believe otherwise, that you can just do this indefinitely and that there's no cost. So again, we can't let them get us on the defensive. We need them to defend the status quo, because that is where we can poke holes in everything that they say, and we can show that all they want to do is keep the corruption, the money laundering, the wars, the massive debts, and the economic manipulation rolling. You know, when they say Bitcoin is used to finance terrorists, say, you know, Bitcoin is what is going to eliminate the CIA's ability to just disappear with $2 trillion, and that they fund terrorism, election manipulation, and assassination around the globe. And we know this. This isn't a conspiracy theory. We have the documents now. It's just a conspiracy theory that everybody is pretending like it's not a problem, or that, oh, we're just not going to do anything because it's the CIA, and they're allowed to do all of these horrible, immoral, disgusting things around the world. So what is your plan to stop that without Bitcoin? Why do you want to keep funding them and allowing them to do these horrible things to other people on the planet and our own citizens for that matter? When we're talking about energy, you know, Bitcoin is a miracle of an incentive for stranded energy sources and for efficiency and utilizing burned off natural gas and making investments in distant or temporarily unavailable renewable energies, making them profitable and worthwhile. You know, how are they going to fix that? How are they going to do those things? How are they going to fund those projects and make that profitable, make that a valuable enterprise without Bitcoin? You know, when they say Bitcoin is for money laundering, post the story about HSBC getting caught laundering billions of dollars, explicitly hiding their books with direct relationships with murderous, militarized drug cartels. Literally demonic human beings, and not one of those people went to prison. They barely got a slap on the wrist while simultaneously getting essentially interest-free loans from the central bank so that the people were paying for their fine. Bitcoin makes that obsolete. It obliterates their ability to pull this off. It obliterates their privilege in getting free money from the spigot that everybody else pays for. It opens up the markets and even rips the profits from the drug cartels. Why are you so anti-Bitcoin? Are you on the payroll of the drug cartels or these evil bankers? Why else would you be denouncing the very tool that would rid the world of these horrible assholes? Make them defend the corrupt system that we have today. Make them defend the staggering levels of debt and manipulation. Make them defend the robbing of an entire generation of their opportunity to retire. Make them defend trillions of dollars in money laundering, fraud, and war that has been made possible explicitly by the fiat system, while they try to demonize the comparative grains of sand of that activity that happens in Bitcoin. If it's even there, they're probably just making that shit up. We have nothing to prove. We are here fixing their fucking problems that they put on the world. Fairness or cheating? What could possibly be more fair than Bitcoin? Do you believe in equality? Then how could we possibly support such a corrupt monetary system that fuels poverty, endless war, pollution, and an insurmountable mountain of debt? You think cheating is wrong? Well, how do you support a system that embeds cheating into its very DNA? You know, the fairness cheating aspect is a place where I think we have a really strong argument, even though I agree with Andy and Peter that the real strongest, the apex predator of Bitcoin moral arguments is the liberty and oppression argument. But a simple observation of the fiat system, and, you know, teach that. Damn it, we need to drive that home. It shows how deeply unfair and just absurd it is by design. It is literally impossible for it not to devolve into corruption and special interest. It is built into the DNA of the system. If you create the incentives to profit massively from that, there's no way to avoid the consequences. There is unbelievable truth in the show me the incentives, I will show you the results. If you create those incentives, it will be there. End of story. Doesn't matter how many angels you put in that system. Bitcoin is fair money. Bitcoin is provably fair. Everyone plays by the same rules. They don't get the same outcome. They get the same rules. They get the output that they put in and nothing more. If you believe in equality of rules, Bitcoin is the only monetary system that comes even close to providing that. Whew, getting worked up. let's see. What do I got? I got notes here. I should stick to them. Deflation. So one of the points that's, I think this is in the fairness and cheating section. They talk about deflation and recommend The Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth. So good. You got to read it if you haven't or listen to it. I listen to it. I always listen to books these days. Arguing against deflation, this is something that I've noticed surprisingly is not as hard as I thought, particularly for the normie, is keep asking them every single time they try to justify it. Just keep asking them from a personal perspective. So it's better that you got poorer this year than wealthier. It's better that you can't buy more stuff. And when they say, oh, well, then there won't be as much business or the business won't make as much money. It's like, well, yes, they would, because any amount of money that you gave them would now be worth more. And almost any argument about deflation can pretty much be smashed with an example of that same relationship in computers and electronics. Like the idea that we won't buy anything because money is deflating in value is just absurd. That we won't make investments, because the whole point of money and all of that stuff is to just better our lives, is to be more productive, more efficient, and to get our time back. So that same idea is that You know, people are saying that that will happen if we have like 3% deflation. Oh my God, or 5% deflation. But we have like 50% deflation in electronics. So why is it that we buy new technology when it pays, when it will literally buy twice the computer the next year? Why is it? Well, it's because that's explicitly due to the fact that the new technology is making us vastly more productive. Like the MacBook that I'm working on, I purchased recently, and it was purchased with debt, you know, so I didn't have to sell Bitcoin. But it has lost a huge amount of its value. It's not worth even close to what it was when I got it. But it has saved me enormous amount of time in getting my work done, truly. And so did finally buying Logic and Final Cut and Motion to get my work done and work on the videos and the editing and all of this stuff, instead of using the ripped versions. It really has simplified everything, and it's made my process, it's cut down so much excess and redundant work in my workflow. It's about productivity. So it makes sense to buy something that loses value if it allows you to produce more value while it is lowering in price. And that's the very crux of deflation. The reason deflation happens is because of new, is because of more productivity, is because of economic growth. If there is no economic growth, if there is no productivity, there is no deflation. It's not there. It's only a result of the money being able to buy more because we made more and the amount of money stayed still. If we don't make more, if we're not more wealthy, well, then the price of the money stays right where it is. Deflation literally just means we got wealthier and we are better off. When someone argues against it, ask them why it is bad to be better off than you were last year. No, it doesn't mean I'm going to wait forever, because it does not prevent me from making the investment into the new computer now. You know, 3 years is a long ass time to wait while I'm losing productive capacity in that time, trying to stretch some crappy computer that can barely run the software. I've got to run, you know, 3-year-old versions of the software because the motherboard won't let me update. It's a really great, great quote that Peter and Andy actually put from Jeff Booth's Price of Tomorrow in there, about, actually, I'll just read the whole thing. Understanding this thesis in full requires reading Jeff Booth's brilliant book, The Price of Tomorrow. In a nutshell, technology, entrepreneurship, and economic progress are all about making things better, faster, and especially cheaper. Home lighting, long-distance transportation, communication, and computation have all become orders of magnitude cheaper over time. So in the long run, consumer prices experience deflation in an advancing economy. The consumer's basket of goods and services gets cheaper. This makes consumers effectively richer and better off since their money buys more. Yet, the central bankers tell us we must have inflation. So they vainly swim against the natural deflationary current, print money, lower interest rates, and cause the giant debt bubbles we observe today. Bitcoin fixes this. It delivers a deflationary money to match the natural state of any successful economy, consumer price deflation. And think of the unbelievably unfair privilege that is given to the banks, that is given to, you know, go back to bailouts. Everybody hates the bailouts. They are a perfect example of the backwards broken incentives of the fiat system and how it leads to unfairness, how it benefits cheaters. They are a tool of fiat and fiat only. The political system would never, even if they were able to tax, even like as they're be able to tax Bitcoin in large sums, they would still never throw around a scarce money that they could not easily get back. It is only because of the printing press that they are able to bail out like that. They freaking outlawed the ownership of gold and broke every financial promise they ever made just to prevent from doing this during the gold standard. That's what happens when, I mean, obviously that's not a great result. We don't want that to happen with Bitcoin, but it proves that bailouts are only a consequence of paper money. They want the gold desperately because all of their trustworthiness and all of their economic power comes from knowing that they have economic power. And if they can't print the money, they don't just give that stuff out. They're greedy. They will take it for themselves. They will want it for themselves, and they will hold on to it. Bailouts are a product of fiat, period. Then I'll actually skip over the, I think we have an argument for all of these. And this was just a really great piece on so many perspectives, but this is a great framework to think about this from. Like I said, we don't want to overuse, at least in my opinion, I don't think we should overuse our, ace in the hole. and we have a lot of moral high ground to argue from, and we need to use it. We need to make those arguments. And we also need to be prepared about censorship. There are cypherpunks here, but I think we need to... I don't know what the solution is or like what kind of discussion needs to happen about making sure that we can get messages out to everyone, that we have a pedestal to stand on. But there are so many people being deplatformed right now. It could get really nasty. I don't see it being difficult at all for the major social media platforms to just start wiping out Bitcoiners left and right. If the propaganda really gets hard against them, I don't think that's even close to out of the question, and it's probably something we need to be prepared for, especially since I think the supply crunch is just going to get more and more intense as we move into 2021. And that is where the liberty versus oppression framework, I think, is the absolute most important. It's the most important message that we have. And I think liberty is becoming popular again because people are realizing just how much we didn't have it. So before I get in my final word here, just a huge thank you to our sponsors for the show. The BitBox hardware wallet. I just recommended it to a couple of people today. And one of my really, really good friends is finally going to be getting a hardware wallet. And I pointed him towards the BitBox. So if you don't have your Bitcoin cold storage yet, get the BitBox O2. And check them out at guyswan.com/bitbox. And then, of course, our other amazing sponsor, Level.co, which essentially gives you full Bitcoin banking services and a way to buy and sell without any fees. Check them out at guyswan.com/level. And lastly, thank you so much to my patrons and the supporters of this show and everybody in the Audionauts group. It's just awesome having so many people who I know are dedicated and care about this stuff as much as I do. But as I always say, this is about freedom. And I think that message is going to be something that we need to scream from the rooftops. The message of liberty is one that will never die, and it only becomes more relevant with time. And 2020 basically poured gasoline on our little fire. We need to take advantage of that. The word Bitcoin needs to be synonymous with liberty and protection from the oppressive. When someone comes down hard on Bitcoin, the default position needs to be that they are arguing against freedom and for a cheating, broken, corrupt system that has produced a mess of a world that we find ourselves in. We came here to fix this. It is they who have the obligation to explain why we should not be able to. It is they who will have to argue why there are somehow no problems to fix, and that is when we win. Hold on strong. It's going to get hairy, but we are going to use Bitcoin, and we will fix the disaster they have laid on our shoulders, and they won't stop us. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
Mm. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.